Welcome to the Natural Medicine Healing and Wellness Summit, your guide to feeling younger, reversing disease, and living better now. My name is Dr. Michael Murray, and I'm your host for today, and I am honored to be with Mike Adams. Welcome, Mike, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's really an honor to join you today. We have a lot of passions that we share about plant medicine and healing and all of that. So wherever you want to begin is okay with me.
Okay. Well, first, let me tell people a little bit more about you. I was trying to remember when it was. I would think it's more than 15 years ago, maybe even 20. How long have you been the health ranger, Mike?
For about 13 years, I believe.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I just over-exaggerated, I guess. I was trying to remember, and I do remember the first time I saw you and you introduced yourself to me as the health ranger. And for those of you that aren't familiar with Mike Adams, he's an outspoken consumer health advocate. He's an award-winning investigative journalist, internet activist, and science lab director. He's the founder and editor of naturalnews.com. That's the internet's biggest natural health website. He's also the creator of counterthink.com, foodinvestigations.com, healingfoodreference.com, honestfoodguide.org, and several other websites covering natural health topics. Mike currently resides on a ranch in Austin, Texas. There, he and his wife raise chickens and goats, practicing permaculture and self-sufficiency. Oh, Mike's going to talk to us today about Mother Nature's medicine, but before we get there, I want to ask Mike how he became the health ranger and how did that morph into naturalnews.com? I'm sure it's a fascinating story, Mike.
Well, it has been a fascinating journey. I'll keep it short because I think many of your listeners are probably well familiar with Natural News. But for those who are new to hearing some of my work, I want to warn you up front. I am, some people call me a radical clean food activist. I am not someone who censors my speech. I am an activist. People have called me the Ralph Nader of clean food before. I've been called that today. Some people call me the Donald Trump of clean food. So, you know, the other end of the spectrum. It's all over the board. Here's what I believe in. I believe in protecting life. I believe in consciousness. I believe in free will. I believe in the existence of the human spirit. And I believe that life is worth protecting. And that we have the ability to heal ourselves. We're born with that blueprint. And if we can just have the right healing nutrients, which usually come from nature, and the absence of the toxins and the synthetic chemicals that are destroying our health, then we too can actually live a life free of cancer, free of diabetes, free of heart disease. And Michael, we are winning the clean food wars. I'm so excited about it. Every major company, it seems, is out there announcing more transparent labeling. Campbell's soups are all going to be labeled with GMO content. Whole Foods is going to label everything they sell by the year 2018. Panera Bread just took all the synthetic additives out of all of their soups and most of their menu. Chipotle went 100% non-GMO. Coca-Cola and Pepsi are responding. And they are reformulating their products. They're removing, for example, sodas that used to have citric acid and sodium benzoate, which combines in the soda cans to make toxic cancer-causing benzene chemicals, which you don't want to drink. They're explosive. Come on. So we are winning, Michael, and I'm passionate about it. I do not apologize for my blunt behavior ever. I am here to defend clean food, and I'm a science lab director now. And we are investigating food and publishing the truth on naturalnews.com.
So, Mike, how did you become the health ranger?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I got fed up with – look, I used to be borderline diabetic and overweight significantly.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No. I was borderline type 2. I was very much overweight. I had chronic back pain. This was when I was in my early 30s, and I had high cholesterol. And I was following a very unhealthy diet of typical processed foods. And, you know, the first book I read wasn't yours, but yours was like second or third. The very first book that I picked up was William Duffy, Sugar Blues, I think is the name of it.
Oh, yeah. It was iconic. That was yes. Everyone's That was one of the first books I read too, Mike.
Yeah, it opened my eyes. You know, most of my life, people take this for granted today, but back when I was growing up, you know, and I'm in my 40s today, when I was growing up, there was no connection between what you eat and the health you have. You know, it wasn't really talked about. It was just calories or calories or calories. That was the USDA's official position.
Doesn't matter what you eat. It's a calorie is a calorie. Go have fun. Enjoy it.
Right. And so William Duffy's book opened my eyes. I was hypoglycemic at the time. I cut sugar out of my diet completely. I stopped drinking soda. I stopped eating refined sugars. And guess what? I stopped having near fainting spells late morning after having a high carbohydrate breakfast. Suddenly I realized, you mean to tell me that the food I'm eating can affect my day and my life and my consciousness? Really? And that was my wake-up call.
Yeah.
And from there, everything just followed. I got into food research. I got into phytochemicals, food nutrition, nutrition therapies, disease prevention, and now into the science laboratories. Michael, today I'm running liquid chromatography, mass spectrometry. We're looking at parts per billion concentrations of phytochemicals of different plants and heavy metals analysis. I've been doing that for 2 years. And we are looking at the science of the food and why it is so powerful for healing. And this is my passion.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Yeah, mine as well. And in our paths, we are nourished with enthusiasm and humility and wonder and awe by the power of nature. What are some of the things that you've discovered on your path that have really been epiphanies and really made you go, wow?
Well, probably the most powerful piece of information that everyone can put to use right now who's listening or watching is that you can practice what I call defensive eating. And I haven't seen a book on this yet. Someone needs to write a book on it. You know, maybe you or me, Michael. But
yeah.
Defensive eating means if you're at a restaurant and you're eating something that you know is not the best quality food. Let's say you're having a processed meat at a deli. And you know, for example, there might be sodium nitrite in that meat. And maybe you don't want pancreatic cancer or colorectal cancer from that processed meat. Then you can eat, for example, fresh organic blueberries. With the salami or whatever, the blueberries unleash the vitamin C and other phytochemicals that largely nullify the nitrites in the processed meat, thereby making that meal safe. Now, there are some other things along the same line, Michael. I did this research in my lab. I have an ICP-MS, elemental analysis. We look at trace levels of heavy metals. I found out that the best way to bind up mercury from dietary sources, such as fish, you know, tuna, is to eat with that fish strawberries, peanut butter, or chlorella. Those three things bind with the mercury so that it goes through your digestive system, out your digestive tract, and you do not absorb the mercury, meaning it doesn't effectively enter your blood or your tissues or organs. There are so many things that you can do when you're eating food to eat defensively, where you match a toxin that you know you're consuming with a not just an antioxidant, but some kind of food or nutrient or fiber that nullifies those toxins. And this information, I think, this is the big wow, that even though we live in a toxic world, Mother Nature still provides the defenses that we can use today.
That's fabulous. That's great, great insight. You know, in the introduction, it says you're practicing permaculture and self-sufficiency. Some people may not have heard those terms. Can you define those terms and kind of tell people what you're up to? Because I think those are really core issues in your life.
Allow me to answer that question by mentioning something that happened to me today. I was with a really wonderful man, a man from India who's a PhD, and he's one of my trainers on the what's called the time of flight mass spectrometry instrument, and he did his PhD on natural medicine, and we were talking about things we do when we're not geeks in the lab running instruments. And it turns out both of us grow our own food, and I asked him, why do you grow your own food? And he says, because I have the laboratory instruments to know what's in the food that we buy at the grocery store.
Wow.
And I said, that's the same reason I grow my own food. So what I did about a year ago, I invented a non-electric, non-circulating hydroponic system, which means it uses no soil. And I give away the plans for free, by the way. It's on foodrising.org. It's a nonprofit website. You can see how to make them yourself. They're easy to make. And I grow my own food in there, salad greens, medicinal herbs like oregano, basil, thyme, and so on, but lots and lots of greens. And when I take those greens and I test them in my lab, I find that they are the cleanest greens that I can possibly find. A year ago, Michael, we donated about, I think it was 200 of these systems to schools all across America. So we helped put these in the hands of children to show them the magic of growing your own food, saving seeds, how to use non-circulating hydroponic technology. There's no electricity, no pumps, no moving parts. It uses gravity, and you can grow your own food. So because our food is so – well, not all of it, but a lot of it is so contaminated today, I think it's important that we as a society learn to be more local with our food production, which creates – a better safety of the food. It reduces the fossil fuel footprint of the food and the CO2 footprint, and it also creates food security at a national level, food redundancy. And you know how people in Cuba, they grow their own food. It's one of the wonderful things that Cuba does. I don't agree with a lot of the things that Cuba does, but one thing they do that's nice is people grow their own food. If we did that more in America, we would be healthier and happier, and we would have a reduced ecological footprint for the food that we're consuming. It's a win-win-win across the board.
Yeah, I liked some of the plants that you're growing, because those are really packed full of – they're concentrated sources of valuable healing agents. You obviously would agree with that.
Yes. Well, and I know you've taught this too, Michael, in your numerous books, but the closer that you get – when you're looking at a medicinal plant such as oregano, the closer that you can get to consuming that in its living form straight from the soil, the more potent the phytochemicals. The minute that you harvest it and you dry it, you start to lose that potency. And it can still be very valuable. I'm not saying that oregano isn't valuable 6 months later in a capsule.
It's great for flavor, but it's not going to provide the same level of medicinal compounds. I love juicing those sort of greens, and that's something that most people never thought of, but that you can juice fresh basil, thyme, peppermint, sage. It does add a lot of zing and medicinal qualities to carrot juice or apple juice or any other fresh juice.
It really does. You really nailed it there. And here's another big aha that I've stumbled across I'd love to share here. It's about juicing, what I call a hybrid approach of juicing your vegetables but blending your fruits. And you combine this. Now, the reason I say this is because the fruits have the very, very valuable pectin fiber. The pectin turns out to be – they are like magnets for dietary toxins, right? The pectins latch onto them and they carry them through your system, whereas the greens, often like a celery stalk, for example, you don't really need all that celery fiber. What you need is the juice from the celery or the juice from the greens. So what I do today when I'm, quote, juicing, I'm actually blending pears and apples and citrus. I'm blending them, whole, obviously not the peeling for the citrus, but I'm blending the whole fruit to get the pectin. And then I'm juicing the greens and I'm pouring the green juice into the Vitamix to blend with the fruit pectins.
I love it. Fibers. That's great.
Yeah, that's my approach to it. And here's the thing. If you are juicing certain greens, if they're not clean, then the fact that you have not consumed fiber with them can actually expose you to the toxins that are in an unclean leafy green, Whereas when you have the fiber of the blended apples and pears and so on, then you actually have a buffer of protection against that. So you get all the benefits, but you greatly reduce any risk of toxins getting through.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Michael, because if you look at something like cilantro or chlorella or spirulina, these are greens that are really good at attracting heavy metals and other toxins. That's great if you're ingesting a pure form, but out in the world, if those plants are grown in kind of less than ideal situation where there's a lot of heavy metals and toxins, they're actually going to concentrate those compounds.
That's right. You've nailed it. And one of the subjects that I love to research is phytoremediation of soils, which, as you know, means using plants to pull toxins out of the soils in order to heal those soils. And then you take those plants and you throw them away.
You don't want to be ingesting those plants.
Exactly. But you're so correct, because we've tested a lot of, for example, medicinal mushrooms that are grown in various countries around the world. And we see some interesting patterns. We see, by and large, that things grown in the United States tend to be very, very clean. Things grown in Canada, very clean. Japan, very clean. The European Union, also very clean. But China really has a well-deserved reputation for producing many, many bulk powders and bulk foods and supplement materials that can show, for example, 5,000 parts per billion lead. I've seen it over and over and over again. And I found mangosteen powder once from Thailand that was over 10 parts per million lead, just the lead. And I've seen a lot of mercury in fish treats for pets, even that have been harvested from supposedly pristine sources. The fact is that there's so much mercury now in circulating in the ocean, and as you know, it bioaccumulates up the food chain, it ends up in the fish, and then when that's dried and concentrated as a pet treat, we can see crazy levels, like up to one part per million of mercury in a fish, a pet treat made of fish, and that is way too much to feed any animal, period.
Wow. You know, Michael, I interviewed Joe Pizzorno, my partner in the Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine and the founder of Bastyr University for this summit. And Dr. Pizzorno made a statement that the major factor in the development of chronic disease today is the effects that environmental toxins have on our enzyme systems. And he looked at heavy metals, pesticides, persistent organic pollutants, and other compounds. And in this interview that he gave, he provided very sound, hard data to support his contention. And, you know, I look at what we've done to our food supply, and boy, it's sad, because people are suffering when they don't have to suffer. They need to start eating clean. So what you're doing is really, really important. Building a lab to test food is an extremely expensive endeavor. The equipment that you're operating is very, very expensive, and then you've got to have the people that know how to use it teach you how to use it. That's also very expensive. So you're making a tremendous investment here to try and help people eat in a more clean manner.
Well, you're right, and I appreciate you pointing that out. If my life were lived solely for the purpose of accumulating money for no other purpose than sitting on it, it would be far easier. There are easier ways to do that. What we're doing is courageous, I think. It's difficult. It's expensive. I've had to spend a lot of time undergoing instruction in chemistry and analytics and instrumentation myself. I can run all the instruments myself at an expert level. That's what I demand to do. But let me share something with you that has come from this that will blow away everyone listening. And I call it the harmonics of nutrition. And you see, and the heavy metals contamination, here's how it works. If you get into the science of this and you get into the kinds of things that I do, which is mass spec analysis of accurate mass phytochemical molecules, what you find is, you know, molecules are made of elements. Elements exist in nature in a natural spread of isotopic ratios. for example, lead, let's say lead, will exist in masses of 206, 207, and 208. And every element has naturally occurring isotopes, like, you know, carbon-12 and carbon-13. And carbon-13 exists in about 1.1% naturally of carbon-12, carbon-12 being the dominant isotope of carbon. Now, I'm not going to get too geeky on you guys, so just stay with me on this for your audience. Here's the thing. When your body expects to see something like zinc, or it expects to see something like magnesium, there is an isotopic spread that is spread out among molecular masses that your internal biology expects to see. Now, if you replace a zinc with something like mercury, which is in the same column of the table of elements, and it has natural affinity or replacement value for zinc. In other words, mercury can interfere with zinc in metabolism, right? Then the mercury may trick your body into putting the molecule where it's supposed to go in your cells. However, the mercury isotopic spread has a different look, and these isotopic peaks look like harmonics. And the upshot is that mercury is playing the wrong tune.
Yeah.
It's the wrong tune, the wrong harmony for your cells, and that is sort of a metaphorical way to explain the toxicity of lead and mercury and cadmium, but it's very real. It's like there's an internal tune that is disharmonic when you get those environmental toxins in your system.
It's bad news. And these are compounds, these heavy metals that really are exist at deeper levels. They're not supposed to be in the surface of the earth, and we've brought them up through some of our practices, and we've put them into the environment, and they're very difficult to get rid of.
You make a good point that most of these metals were buried, and they were in effect nullified. They were deep underground, but through the industrialization of our modern society, we have mined them, we have pushed them out through pollution, through refining and smelting. We have released them into the environment through our computing technologies. How many people listening have bought, let's say, an iPhone, and you threw it away? Where did it go? Do you realize the rare earth metals and the toxic elements that are in that iPhone? You know, computer electronic waste is a major, major source of the pollution that is killing us in our world today. And a lot of people aren't connecting those dots yet. More and more are. So I'm glad to see that. But it is something, you know, there are people in India whose job is to melt down circuit boards and harvest the metals to be sold back to the companies in China that use them. These poor people in India are being heavily poisoned by the toxic metals that go into circuits, electronics manufacturing, and they do not have the protections that they need. And this is something that we, as a first world country, we export to third world nations so that they deal with our electronic waste. They inhale the poisons while we surf on our iPhones. It's really a distorted, disturbing situation.
Let's focus on a little bit of the positive points of your message. I know you wanted to talk a bit about how Mother Nature synthesizes better medicine than man.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been sold on this model that only a pharmaceutical scientist using a synthetic process in a laboratory can produce what the FDA calls a drug. Well, the simple, inescapable truth is that Mother Nature has been synthesizing far superior molecules long before humanity ever existed, and that this process happens naturally. The plants do not ask for royalties on patents. That's a big plus. There's no intellectual property claim. These molecules, because they exist in natural synergies in the plant, which I just referred to previously, talking about the tune or the harmonics of nutrition, because they exist naturally in natural ratios in plants, they have a much higher safety profile, greatly reduced toxicity, which usually comes from isolated synthetic molecules, and they are vastly more affordable, especially in this age when pharmaceuticals are becoming very, very expensive, more so every year. So who wouldn't want a medical system that is safer, more effective, and less expensive? Well, That's what plants give you. And by the way, folks, a lot of those plants are probably growing in your backyard, in the park behind your house, in your community, in the forest. They are growing all around you. All you have to do is learn what they are and learn how to use them.
That's beautiful. That's very well said.
Well, it's true. You know this as much as anybody. In fact, the drug companies that are clever, they go to plants, obviously, to find these candidate molecules that they can then alter and synthesize and patent and then turn it into a drug. You know, I'm always – it seems like every 6 months I see another news story about some drug company trying to turn resveratrol into another drug, right? You see that all the time.
Yeah, or curcumin or berberine or any of these wonderful compounds in nature that have some science behind them. Yeah, it's quite interesting. What's interesting to me is that for some of these compounds, researchers have been working for decades to try and find something, some modification that will make the modified compound work as good as the natural compound. And in the case of curcumin, they just haven't been able to do that.
Well, you're so right, and. You even have cases where people are trying to monocrop grow foods to extract the nutrients, like resveratrol, for example, in grape leaves. And you know that the grape plant tends to heighten its production of resveratrol in response to fungal infections of the plant. So if you're monocropping grapes and you're growing them in nice, clean rows and you're spraying them with antifungal chemicals – then you harvest those leaves and the plants and the seeds and you wonder, how come they don't have all the healing chemicals in them, right? Well, it's because you didn't get the wildcrafted grapes. You know, you have to – the best medicine, as you know, is medicine that where you go out into nature and that plant has had to struggle to survive. It has had to adapt. This is why I'm such an advocate of wildcrafted herbs and you know, wildcrafted food essentially. And growing your own food in a permaculture environment, which I know you asked me about this earlier, but permaculture implies a diversity of plants. There is no monoculture in permaculture. It is a very, very diverse, multi-layered system of synergistic foods that grow in almost a chaotic-looking structure. There are no rows, but they're you know, a lot of people would look at a permaculture garden and they wouldn't even recognize it as a garden. They would think it's a weed patch, right? But it's medicine and food.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's as close to nature as you can get. And there is a symbiotic relationship between many plants.
Yes, well, absolutely. And, you know, you look at what's happening in the banana crops today around the world. You have, you know, virtually all modern bananas are clones of the same plant, of the Cavendish banana.
Yeah, the Big Mike.
Yeah, right. And because of this, they are all vulnerable to the same infestations of bacteria or fungi or what have you. We are on the verge globally of really having a very, very sharp reduction in banana production in places like Ecuador because all the plants are genetically identical. Well, in permaculture, you don't do that. You have genetic diversity, so you have adaptability, sustainability. You also end up with a food system that produces medicine and food all at different seasons, different times of the year, different layers of the ground. Roots in the winter, which of course have enormous benefits for restoring vitality during cold weather, and then you know citrus fruits or above ground berries and other fruits in the spring and summer, which have their own purpose for example, increasing hydration throughout the body, which you need in the summer. And if you go out into the desert and you look at the food and medicine plants in the desert like aloe vera, what are they good at doing? Retaining water and lubricating the digestive system. Everywhere you go, if you look at the climate, Mother Nature has created plants that are building the molecules needed to survive in that climate.
That's interesting.
Mother Nature's done all the research for us.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Mike. I like the way that you think. To take that to a practical application, we know that red pepper grows really well in hot climates around the world. And they did a study with red pepper ingestion, and it showed that it actually enhanced our ability, humans' ability, to deal with a hot external environment. Everyone thinks, oh, I eat hot and spicy food, it's going to make me hot. Look where they're eating hot and spicy food, where it's really, really hot, but it down-regulates our heat sensors and allows us to tolerate those temperatures. It's really interesting. One of the best examples that I came across with crops was there's a type of a yam in Africa that when that yam is in a season, it actually will take the sickle cell trait and will normalize that red blood cell. When that yam is not in season, it coincides when the mosquitoes are at their highest number, and so it's during the malaria season. So the sickling of the cell was actually a protector against developing malaria. And during the time when that yam was available, that unsickling of the cell allowed the population to thrive and carry on. But when that yam wasn't around, the red blood cells would sickle and become resistant to malaria. We have no idea the magic that is in our food. I'm working on a book right now, Mike, that will be out in 2017, and it's called The Magic of Food. And I'm going to add a few more things just on from our conversation today. You pointed out some things that I need to investigate a little bit in more detail and make sure I put it in this book.
Well, that's exciting to hear. I can't wait to see your book. And yeah, these, you know, human civilization needs to think deeply about these issues. You know, we are very young as a civilization that has high mobility, where people and cultures have been very mobile, but they've been moved out of the areas where they had traditionally lived for many, many thousands of years before that. And there are all kinds of ramifications to this that are not well understood by medical science, or certainly conventional medicine. And you just pointed out one of them. You know, another huge one that I talk about a lot is the fact that people whose ancestors lived closer to the equator have more skin pigmentation to protect them from ultraviolet light as a result, because they had a lot more sun exposure closer to the equator, of course. As a result, when you move those people into a northern climate, like let's say Canada or Boston, United States, they become vitamin D deficient. And vitamin D supplementation is, in my opinion, one of the most crucial steps for helping the African American community in America prevent cancer for just pennies a day. And yet, African American populations and even Latino populations to a great extent are not really being communicated this very crucial information, while those of us with more fair skin, you know, we only need a few minutes of sunlight a day and we can generate sufficient vitamin D. But these are just the kinds of things that we as a species need to take into consideration so that we can help everyone lead a healthier life, no matter where they live.
That's really well said. The last topic that you wanted to talk about, we kind of touched on a bit, growing and distilling herbal medicines into a potent medicine chest. You're growing these herbs. What are you doing after you grow them to make them into a part of your medicine chest?
Well, several things. What I'm working on right now is setting up a distillation system in my lab to distill the volatile oils from plants like oregano, and then I'm going to analyze those in the lab and make sure I get a good fingerprint profile of the phytochemical constituents. But you don't need the lab to do this. You can just get a distillation system. You can buy them online for a few hundred dollars. You can grow your own herbs, distill the oils, just using a simple heat source. You can also use, of course, alcohol to make alcohol extracts, or you can just use what Chinese medicine has used for thousands of years, water extracts. You soak the plant in water, you shake it up, or you boil it with water if it's the right kind of plant. You know, Chinese medicine does this with a lot of barks, tree barks, as medicine. Cinnamon was medicine in Chinese medicine thousands of years before it was a treat in Western civilization. So you can extract medicine in all these different ways. But the good news is that you can continue to grow a medicine chest year after year. You know how every year across America, Michael, you hear about the expired pharmaceutical turn-in drives, you know, where people are encouraged to turn in all their expired drugs? Well, if you're growing your medicine, it never expires. You just keep it growing. You can harvest it at any time. It's always fresh. You can make more tinctures, and you can do it, again, for virtually free. What else is free in this world, Michael? In fact, you can grow your own food. You don't even have to pay taxes on it. You think about it. If you buy food at the grocery store, you get a paycheck, you pay taxes, and then you take after-tax money and you buy your food. Well, if you grow your food, you don't even pay taxes. It's tax-free food. It's the best in the world, man.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, Mike, I think we've covered everything for this summit. Find Mike Adams at naturalnews.com. I'm sure many of you have been to the site. If not, get there, become a member there. You'll be a part of a great community. Mike is also offering us a free gift today, which is an audio on the world's most amazing anti-cancer foods. What can you tell us about this free gift, Mike?
Well, it's an audio program that simply goes through the most powerful anti-cancer foods that I've come across in my research and reading and study. And there are many of them. They're very powerful, and most of them are readily available at any grocery store. You just have to know what they are and how they work and start making them a routine part of your diet. I've always believed, Michael, that eating healthy does not have to be crazy expensive. In fact, if you grow some of your own food, it can be virtually free, that part of it. Health is attainable to everyone, no matter what their economic status. Even if the poorest person on this planet, if they have the right knowledge, they can eat better than the kings of human history.
Wow, that's great. I love that. I might steal that quote. I okay, love that right. One. That's a good one. Mike, thanks again for being with us today. We really appreciate you sharing your time, your energy, your experience, and your enthusiasm. And thanks to all you viewers and listeners out there. Just a reminder, if you want to purchase the upgrade package, the price is discounted today from $197 to $97. And with the upgrade package, you're going to be able to download and listen at your convenience all of the trainings, over 24 hours of training, transcripts of each talk, and all of the speakers' bonuses. Just click the order link button below this recording. Once again, thank you for joining the Natural Medicine Healing and Wellness Summit and making optimal health a priority in your life. I look forward to connecting with you at the next session. God bless.